the benefits to it, let us know. And if you are a benefactor of affirmative action or have been, mm-hmm. certainly reach us out and tell us about your experience.
Yeah, and actually, I was a benefactor, so
I was too.
Okay, all right. We can talk. So, like, when I
was a single mom, a single white mom on welfare. Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I'm not close enough to the mic. Sorry, everybody.
No problem. And so when I was going through my admission process after graduating or looking at colleges to attend, and so I was basically laying it hard with the whole Hispanic thing. I got to be honest. And so, you know, I was applying.
You do what you got
to do. You do what you got to do to get into the colleges, right, for that higher education. And so I was, you know, asking, you know, the National Hispanic College Fund, you know, and I was getting, you know, these universities were finding me funding through their diversity programs and outreach to, you know, and part of it, it's because, oh, we're going to have another number for our diversity quota, right? And so at the time, I could care less because I wanted a higher education. And so it did benefit me without a doubt. And so I am a believer in affirmative action, but I think the larger question, you know, some people would say, you know, and Nestor alluded to this earlier, where, oh, Obama became president, we no longer need affirmative action.
Which
because
is not true.
Yeah.
But I think that something happened. As I mentioned, college has become a business, just like healthcare has become a business. And at some point when affirmative action started, it was working the way that it was intended to work. But then over time, the colleges felt like they needed to tweak it because they needed to make it more valuable for them on the money side. And that's, I think I need to do more research on that. But I know there was a point where it started to change, where they had the system in place and then they started to tweak it because, and that's what we have now, is after all these tweaks. And you can go probably state by state.
Yeah, we certainly don't have a system that's consistent across the board.
Right.
We have colleges determining what works for them, universities determining what works for them, college boards, you know, all of those things. There are policies in place that they've created. So they've created these little silos of, here's my interpretation of affirmative action. So there's no major consistent effort nationwide that says, okay, these are those basic principles.
Right. And you know, the thing is, look, let's say if people look in the grand scheme of things and say affirmative action, let's say, benefits white females and African Americans more, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, the funny thing is you still got to go get a job. So if...
We can talk about that.
Yeah, if my daddy has a company, this, that, and you know, I'm just looking at the history of, you know, white men at companies, they may say, okay, yeah, they went to this school and they're smart, but I'm still going to hire my buddy here. Yeah. Because I think about all the people who, and this is not even through affirmative action, but whether they got a job through mm-hmm. a certain privilege mm-hmm. or they got into the school, because I won't name names, but I probably know at least four or five people personally who are not black males or females, and they're not white women, but they got into certain schools or certain jobs based on who they know and not what they know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's prevalent, right? I mean, even legacy programs over, I feel like that's a part of that, right? It's a part of this institutional systemic issue.
But it's how institutions also keep tradition alive, though, right? Mm-hmm. That's the flip side, you know?
They want to keep the money alive.
Yeah, they want to keep
it. Because some of these people...
Yeah, I agree. It's not always about money. Sometimes it's about tradition and continuing you know, the belief in higher education. Like, okay, Joshua, you know, Jamal, you went to University of Michigan. Wouldn't you want your child to go to University of Michigan?
Yes, no, it's cold up there. But it is money, because the thing about it is I'm looking at some of these people I can see. People can Google this, you know, stuff. If somebody, it's like donors, it's similar to sports. If someone's parent is a legacy and went to Harvard or Yale, and they can give $20 million to the school because they got a business.
But those are very few and far between, you know what I mean?
No, they're not.
I feel like legacy programs, my understanding is, yes, it could be an alumni, but your chances are better if that parent has donated a large sum of money. It's essentially, and again, that draws that distinction between race and wealth, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm. right.
So right. You could be a person of color whose father happened to be the first mm-hmm. whatever going to Harvard. Well, your chances are better. You have access to resources. Mm-hmm. I feel like legacy programs, I think, to me, are a little frustrating. I understand the point of them. And yeah, there's an element there that has to do with family tradition. There's an element there that, like, I wore right. green and gold, so I want my right. son or my daughter to wear green and gold.
I'll give you a great that. Example. I don't know what his GPAs are, but let's look at one of our recent presidents, George Bush Jr. And mm-hmm. and just when hearing him talk and whatnot, let's just think of what his overall intelligence is mm-hmm. and look at the schools he went to.
Mm. Exactly.
I think,
I'm saying,
well,
I
mean, still
it's hard to deny that. It's hard to deny
I'm saying,
that.
Wealth can take you certain places.
Wealth can take you
in the connections.
Yeah, yeah.
He got in, but he didn't even have to finish, according to some of the stories. I mean, did he finish the Coast Guard? Did he finish college? Did he finish things? He never got the end
yeah,
story.
He finished.
He finished college, and I believe yeah. he got an honorable discharge from the Coast Guard. Is that correct?
I don't know.
But my understanding is that he did because okay. I felt like it came up during his run.
Well, we could have a whole show on who you know and
yes.
how you got there.
Yes. And unfortunately, boiling it all down, it comes down to access, right? Who has access, who doesn't.
Right.
And it started off as women didn't have access and people of color didn't have access. But that has started to adjust. That started to change because more women have access, a few more right. people of color have access, right. but that's not where the lines are being right. drawn anymore.
Right.
Right.
And
it's not based on
right.
race.
And real quick, we're talking about did he finish or not? George W. Bush, I mean, we've all heard him talk and speak. He has a bachelor's from Yale and an MBA from Harvard. Now,
really?
If you want to tell me that sounds like someone who could finish a bachelor's at Yale and an MBA at Harvard.
But in defense of George Bush, which I never thought I would ever say those words, in defense of George Bush, I feel like he may be smarter. Book smarts? Then I'm sorry. Even me saying it, it just doesn't even.
It's hard to believe. But
yeah,
but,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Hey,
I don't want to knock this man because he's not.
I gotta say that
Obama
I like him now. I didn't like him when he was president, but I like him now.
See, but that's also problematic, and that's a whole.
Other show.
But again, because you know history, you know. As time goes by, we have perspective. We have historical perspective.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And where does, you know, George W., George H., Carter, where do they fall in their legacy, right? For
yep.
example, Carter, you know, a lot of people would say was one of the worst presidents in American history. Mm-hmm. But what he's done post-presidency
right.
has been amazing,
right? Yeah.
Right?
And I just use that example of Bush because, I mean, I look at our presidents. I mean, look at the last few presidents. Obama, obviously a genius. Bill Clinton, genius. Trump, I don't like him, but genius
nah.
business-wise.
What I'm saying is that
I just use that as an example for the legacy mm-hmm. argument of...
I wouldn't call... Personally, this is my opinion, I wouldn't call him a genius. I would say he knows how to play the game.
Who is that?
45.
45.
I don't know, I mean, because people talk about he had his start, he had money. Yeah, but you have money, but... If you have millions and you turn to billions, you gotta be.
Well, he bankrupted.
Yeah, but did
I grew up with him.
Did he
I'm
turn
on
into
the East
billions?
Coast, and I grew up
we
watching
don't know.
Him.
We don't know. We don't know.
I watched him do Atlantic City. I saw mm-hmm. the rise and the fall.
Oh yeah,
I think that's
Atlantic
what she's alluding
City.
To.
I saw him bankrupt several times. Mm-hmm. I saw all his scandals. It's like I was.
But
in
some
New
people
York
will say that
like,
you know the system allows him to do that. So he can you know the system allows people to declare bankruptcy, and so you know that's why
so
those laws exist.
System,
you know he's
yeah.
not. He's using the system to his...
He's using all the loopholes that he can find.
Yeah, but is declaring bankruptcy... I have family members who've had to declare bankruptcy,
oh, no,
you know,
yeah,
and
no,
now
not,
they're back on their feet. You know,
yeah.
it happens. And so,
yeah,
and in his case, it was a monumental scale.
Yes, and it was incredibly calculated.
Yes,
right?
It was.
Most
yes.
people
that's
who file
the
for
thing.
Bankruptcy, it's not
yes.
like that's their intention.
Right.
But his was very calculated. It's like, okay, he was weighing out options, and it was like, oh, yeah... Bankruptcy will put you in this position. So it was a very calculated decision. I don't think that was the purpose of.
That's what I mean when I say he knows how to play the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was raised.
I do want to get back
yeah.
on track.
Yeah. yeah
so
exactly.
so
yeah.
I do.
Total
I, do,
note,
I do want when we were in our break. You know, we talked about the affirmative action in the Asian community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, a lawsuit that was placed against Harvard. And
yeah.
talking about legacies, here's a non-legacy example. Jared Kushner's father donated $2.5 million to Harvard,
mm-hmm.
and that's how his son got into Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty much registered fact. And Jared Kushner Herschel's father is not a Harvard alum. So that's a non-legacy example where wealth disparities is still into play, right?
And that's why I think social resiliency score responds to that, right? Mm-hmm. It recognizes those people who don't have access to wealth, who don't have access to a support system, who don't have access to the educational opportunities because of the neighborhood they grew up in, because of the lack of access to employment and other programs. So social resiliency really adjusts this this hope that affirmative action was, but we realized, as mentioned before, that it didn't benefit maybe the most intended targets, right? It benefited women for sure, but then the other piece of that was also to benefit poor people of color.
Right. Well, I think it is a great thing that it does benefit women, but unfortunately, it takes away from benefiting minorities the way it was intended. And I think that's why we had Title IX come about as well, to really help benefit women as well. You know, at the end of the day, people could argue whether it be Title IX or affirmative action should go away. But I think as long as we have people who are going to, whether through legacy or through connections, that we would need these programs in place for all of the groups which are being oppressed.
Mm-hmm. Here are some statistics that validate what Jamal is talking about, the legacy. So the New York Times published an article, a research article in 2009 that says that 15% of, at that point in time, 15% of Harvard students were from the top 1% of wealthy families, and 3% are from the top 0.1% of wealthy families. So the wealthiest of the wealthiest. So 15% of all their students are from the wealthiest of the wealthiest. And so the part of the lawsuit that we're going to be talking about, and Jamal will be talking about this, is that are we really giving, going back to the meritocracy, right? So, like, you know, are these 15%ers really the top of the top when it comes to academic qualifications versus, you know, them being able to get into these elite schools based on their financial, their parents' financial prowess. And so, but at the same time, that's the society we live in where we do award, you know, wealthy families. You know, the gain for the majority of Americans is to accumulate wealth through their lifetime, right?
We're a capitalist society.
Yeah. And more importantly, generally, most people want their daughters and their sons to be better off than they were, right? That is generally how we've wanted to be, right?
Sure.
I've got something about the whole system, though, is that, you know, just because you have wealth does not mean you are the Einstein of the crowd. And we've got people in our society that if they were given a chance, they would rise and shine, but they can't, you know, get into these programs. We could be doing ourselves a disfavor by being so capitalist and so stuck in the way that we do business that we're missing our own opportunities to bring our people up. You know, we might have gems in our society we don't even know because we don't give them a chance in education. We don't even look to find them. What? We just go for the top. It's like taking the cream off the milk and serving everybody else non-fat.
Well, I think a great example of affirmative action working is Justice Sonia Sotomayor. You know, her mother came from Puerto Rico, single mother, and she, you know, she used the free library system to educate herself a lot, not just through the New York educational system, public educational system, but also through just the library. I mean, she talks about that all the time. She's written books about it. And so in affirmative action was able to help her get a higher education, and now she's sitting on the highest court of the land. So that's a positive from affirmative action.
Say something about women. One thing, we kind of outnumber you guys. So, you know, and then, like, look at World War II when you all went to war. Who took over the factories? It was the women. So,
what was a Betty,
go girls.
Betty the River?
Is it Betty the Riveter?
Just vote for the girls, you know, it's not to say that we shouldn't be getting some of this. You know,
no, I agree. It needs to be
access.
Yeah,
but
and we'll talk about Title IX in a second.
Yeah. I feel like it needs to be. Excuse me. It needs to be a continued conversation for sure. It needs to be an evolution of what affirmative action looks like, right? And for me, the social resiliency score is kind of that next evolution. I know it's huge because affirmative action, just to get to this point, took so much time, so much effort, so many fights, and we're still fighting about this. But again, as mentioned before, the benefits aren't necessarily hitting the intended audience, right? Completely. You have people fighting against it. You have all those things. So I think social resiliency is more an evolution of where we are today. It's more an evolution of our policies that maybe worked way back when, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. But we're in a different time. We're in a different place where, yes, people are free for the most part. There is still indentured servitude, unfortunately, but for the most part, people have access. So,
how so? How would you claim that there's indentured servitude?
Sorry, when I say, indentured servitude, I'm talking about people that come across the border and they're stuck in fields where they're picking strawberries and they have to pay off rent in some house where 12 people live and they're just trying to make it. And these people are stuck in situations that they can't get out of, you know, whether they're here, whether they're documented or undocumented or any of those things. There are people that are stuck in a system of oppression that they cannot break free from. I mean, that's just the reality of where we live, and that has to do with access to resources. It has to do with access to wealth, access to people, access to all of those things that, unfortunately, many poor people, I'm not even going to say poor people of color, even though that's absolutely true, but many poor people just don't have that. So they're stuck in situations that they can't break free from.
And we have those communities here in the Tampa Bay area.
100%.
East Tampa, there's parts of East Tampa. Out talking about migrant workers in Wamama, mm-hmm. you know, and Plant City and in those areas, we have strawberry farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And migrants are working the strawberry farms.
Absolutely.
Significantly.
And for me, indentured servitude is not that they're forced, but there are no other options but to do that thing.
Now, quick question. Here's a playing devil's advocate. So what about the affirmative action possibly reinforcing actual stereotypes, right? Where the stereotype is that you need affirmative action to be able to get into school because you are not academically smart enough to say, mm-hmm. right? So how about that flip side of the coin? How is that addressed, right?
I mean, at the end of the day, yes, there are people that will argue, I want to get in for my own merits, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want a friend. And I know those people. I know some of those people that feel that way. And I'd say that's fine if you had that opportunity, if you were that Alex kid as opposed to that Ellen kid, and you were Alex, and Alex fought hard in his community with all the challenges that he had, he might be like, I want to get into Harvard on my own merits. But, you know, at the end of the day, Alex isn't going to get into Harvard because he doesn't beat out Ellen at a 9.65. So I feel like the people who argue against it because they want to go in on their own merits, those are also people with access to resources,
right.
Unfortunately.
Right.
And I mean, take somebody like Clarence Thomas, who is the only Black Supreme Court justice, and he is diametrically opposed to affirmative action because he believes it is based on their own merits and all those other things. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's somebody who's speaking from a place of privilege.
Yeah. In an ideal society, it would be a meritocracy. I would mm-hmm. agree. I mean, in Clarence Thomas's comments and beliefs and position on affirmative action would be valid, but the reality on the ground is completely different.
Absolutely.
And so there's tons of examples, and we've been talking about some of those. Jamal's going to tell us a little bit about the Harvard. There's a Harvard lawsuit, and
The Harvard lawsuit.
You know, Harvard could be, I mean, they could very well lose this one because, previously I stated a fact that a Princeton sociologist showed that Asian Americans needed SAT scores of 140 points higher than white students to get into elite colleges. So what's going on with this Harvard lawsuit is some Asian students have filed a lawsuit against Harvard, and it's been backed by the Justice Department that they are being discriminated against by Harvard by not accepting some of them, accepting other people who are less qualified. In essence, they're trying to put a cap on Asian enrollment,
mm-hmm.
essentially. And just reading one of the articles from the New York Times, and you know, some of the cases I was looking at, whether it be University of Michigan or Texas, people might have had 3.5, 3.6 GPAs or whatnot. But this one individual, they had perfect scores on the SAT, perfect scores on 9 advanced placement exams, first in their class out of 952 students. But
that's impressive.
Yeah, that is impressive.
But based on the number of Asians who make the 6A kind of have that same qualifications, this particular person didn't get in. And whether it be that Harvard's trying to put a cap on the number of Asian students, whether it be someone that like their personal statement, or also I think Harvard, what they also do is they use like these geographical dockets where they try to get a certain number of students from all over the country.
Yeah.
So let's say a city like New York, where it's just it's 17 million people in the state, or no, sorry, in the metro area. You know, they may only want so many people from New York because they're trying to get people in from
Nebraska
yeah. or North Dakota too. So that's what their lawsuit is the basis on, and it's going to be interesting because instead of looking at the opposite end where people are getting in who people believe are less qualified, this is putting a cap on people who may be overqualified. And I mean, it's maybe the first time the courts are going to address this kind of issue, because it is interesting, because I know across the board we do see that Asian Americans are performing higher than all other ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're right about that.
Does Harvard have a right to possibly?
Yeah. So should you know, just because their culture is, you know, their culture shouldn't be affected by this. You know what I mean? Right. So like they're just, that's how they are. They're dedicated. They're,
you know, that's how they roll.
That's how they roll. You have the famous tiger moms, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a real thing. That those actually exist. You know, their culture is all about academic excellence, you know, a tribute to the family, et cetera, et cetera.
And what's going
to
be interesting is, you know, a school like Harvard, there's 40,000 students that apply each year and only 2,000 get in. So one thing that may save Harvard in this situation is that if they have so many outstanding applications, they may have to just decline. I mean, someone can literally do all they're supposed to do, get perfect scores across the board, and Harvard can just say, we can't accept you.
Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the day, they have, see, but that's the thing, right? Looking at that particular lawsuit, if Harvard only accepts 2,000 of the 40,000 people that apply, right. Let's say a third of those people are Asian, high-achieving.
And this is the thing, too. I'm sorry. The chances of admission are 5% of the 26,000 domestic applications. And of those applications, about 3,500 had perfect SAT math scores, 2,700 had perfect SAT verbals, and 8,000 had straight A's. So they could have an argument, but then Harvard may come back and say, we are declining people with perfect scores all the time.
Yeah.
Because they have... they're only accepting 2,000 in,
but
more people have perfect scores.
Is it wrong to decline student, right? So if I go to a school, if I go to a college, let's say Harvard, and I'm the incoming class of 2,000, when I go to that school, I don't want to see a room full of Asians, right? I don't want to see a room full of white people. I don't want to see a room full of people of color, right? I want to see a combination of all of that. I think it's important that the importance of cross-cultural interactions, thank you, shout out to Community Tampa Bay for all the work that you do, but the importance of cross-cultural interactions as we grow, as we get older, only makes our democracy, our country stronger. Right, but because we're able to interact with everybody that comes through the door, instead of, oh, I'm just used to this one thing.
Go ahead, Joel.
I think some people could disagree with that, though.
Oh, no. A lot of people could disagree with that. But I think when we start saying that we're only going to accept based on their level of success, and we're only going to use that as the determining factor, then you're going to have in all of our institutions all the students that have incredibly high success in education without taking into account all these other factors that are so critically important. And I mean, I don't say this in a disparaging way, but you'll have a bunch of nerds in all of our colleges. I was one. And my oldest son is kind of as well. But I say that in the nicest way possible, but then you're going to lose out on all these other fundamental aspects of college life, of career choices, of just social interactions. You lose out on all of that, which truthfully, I feel like is the purpose of college, or one of them.
And so, and to Nestor's point, actually, I was reading Jeffrey Toobin. He's a well-known journalist. He published an article in The New Yorker in October. And here's just a summary, which kind of goes in line with what Nestor was just saying. Jeffrey Toobin says, the argument against affirmative action in college admissions, in which would be in favor of the plaintiffs in the Harvard law in the Harvard case, because they're basically the plaintiffs are saying, you know, affirmative action is hurting our capability of being able to be admitted into Harvard based on merits. So again, the argument against affirmative action in college admissions rests on a claim of objectivity that grades and test scores, which can be reduced to numbers, are the only legitimate grounds on which to differentiate students from one another. In fact, race remains a critical part of identity in contemporary America, and diversity represents a gift both to its direct beneficiaries and to the schools, which can enjoy the perspective of students of different backgrounds. In the Grutter case, Justice O'Connor's, Sandra Day O'Connor, was moved by the amicus briefs submitted by retired military officials and current corporate executives who said that they needed a diverse pool of future leaders equipped to take over when white males became a shrinking part of the population. Mm. Then, as now, a diverse student body is both a national security and an economic imperative. Mm-hmm. This is Jeffrey Toobin's own opinion about the Harvard case and the overall overarching implications that it may have for national security.
Absolutely.
And for businesses, that diversity, basically Jeffrey is arguing in favor that we should have diversity and that the leaders in our business community already are aware of this and that they're also in favor of this. And so, you know, so it's a very, Jeffrey argues in favor of affirmative action in this article, as you can hear. And so, Jamal, do you have any other comments on this lawsuit specifically?
Yeah, and one thing is, just this goes back to, you know, Harvard's going to is having to release a lot of documents and things they didn't want to, and that's all going to be out there. But one thing it says is here in the article is Harvard said it also considers tips or admission advantages for some applications. And the plaintiffs are saying in the case, the college gives these tips to five different groups, racial and ethnic minorities, and this is when it gets interesting, okay? Listen to the next few categories. Recruiter athletes, okay? So let's say that's two things that could benefit minorities, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say if minorities are athletes or minorities are just racial minorities. The other three categories which they give advantages to are legacies, children of Harvard or Radcliffe alumni, and relatives of Harvard donors. So do you see
relatives? Of
yes, ours. Yes. So those categories—that's what I'm saying. Those categories are going to propel people. So you take anyone with a sort of some money, $1 million, $2 million, or whatnot, and their family. Well, my uncle gave $1 million, so now I'm in the same category of getting an advantage. So
yeah, that's amazing. Hey, any of my family members that want to donate to Harvard, let me know when you do.
Yeah, right.
So I'll know to apply that year.
And you can get your kids in there.
Yeah, I get my kids in there.
I do feel we're hitting Harvard pretty hard.
But sure.
It's in the news.
Right. And, it's in the news. This is the latest lawsuit.
Yeah.
Harvard is an example. Yale and old Princeton and all the others are still doing
let's talk locally. Like USF, UCF, University of Florida, Florida State, University of Miami.
For sure.
Like, you know, here, even within our own state, you know. And so what is the argument in favor of diversity here at the state of Florida?
Well, the argument in favor of a diversity?
Yeah, or against it, if you want to go that way.
Hmm. Well, I think the argument for it is, as Nestor said, it helps provide a good social makeup. Because I know when I went to school at Michigan, for example, you know, I met kind of really for the first... My high school was mainly just black and white. So when I went to Michigan, you know, my roommate, if he's listening, Dustin Zacks, he's down in Miami. He would say, "I'm Jewish, I'm not white." And that's neither here nor there. But I met a lot of people.
Sorry, Dustin, you're also white.
Yeah, on my hall, I was in an all-male hall, and there were 14 guys. And I believe there were about maybe six Jewish guys, two black guys, I think one Asian. So that's, what, eight. And then that would have been like six, I guess, white guys. So we have a lot of diversity, and it's interesting because this is a very interesting case with Harvard, because Harvard actually is one of the most diverse schools out there. Like, whether they have, you know, a high percentage of African Americans more than the mean, Asian Americans. And I think the plaintiffs in this case are actually trying to say that every year Harvard skews the numbers to have a very good racial balance,
mm-hmm.
and not to have one. I mean, obviously they have more probably white males, but they're not trying to have one group much higher,
significantly higher
than how they've been previously represented at the school.
Yeah.
And that's a thank you for that take. I appreciate mm-hmm. that. And so we're going to jump to another break here. And when we come back, we've been talking about affirmative action and the Harvard lawsuit by the plaintiffs who are saying that they're being excluded from being able to be admitted to the university as a result of the affirmative action policies that are in place. And so we're going to go ahead and jump to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue that conversation. We're also going to talk about Title IX because we haven't even talked about that part of it where, you know, to be able, the inclusion of women. Right. And so and how that's changed society since the Title IX was implemented.
From, Keto Nord, he says, mm-hmm. Josh is absolutely correct. Affirmative action policies have largely benefited white women. These facts are easily verified by looking. Oops. By looking at the numbers for the last 40 years.
Mm. And that was actually Jamal who put that out there. So thank you, Jamal. We got somebody who's in agreement with you on that. And you can call us at 813-239-9663. So we're going to jump to this quick break and we'll be right back.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Download WMNF's cool new app on your Android, iPhone, iPad, or any mobile device. And you can check out the Saturday Night Shutdown every Saturday at midnight to 3 a.m.
This is a WMNF community announcement.
Stomp Out Bullying is a national leading anti-bullying organization for kids and teens.
It focuses on reducing and preventing bullying, cyberbullying, and other digital abuse by educating against homophobia, racism, and hatred, decreasing school absenteeism, and deterring violence in schools and online.
Stomp Out Bullying offers hope to students who are bullied and at risk for suicide.
To learn more, you can visit stompoutbullying.org.
This is Roman of the Urban Cafe, and I would like to take this time to thank those of you who have called into our show in the past. Now remember that we welcome your voice, and it's better to call earlier than later to ensure that your voice is heard. The number is 813-239-9663. We would love to hear from you.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing?
Come on,
you good?
I know you like that.
Welcome back. You're listening to the
Welcome back.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. Drive safely out there. Bad weather.
Yes, bad weather. We got a notification here from Pasco County Fire Rescue. Some storm damage. 6700 block of Adis Street in Newport Richey. Several trees are down. One small fire that has been knocked down. And one tree on a car. So that's probably, a little early to tell, but it may have been either just a gust of wind or a possible tornado in the area. Again, stay safe, folks, out there on the road. If you're driving in the whole Tampa Bay area, Pinellas, Polk, Hillsborough, etc., some pretty a big thunderstorm front is coming through, or it's actually already here.
Mm-hmm.
And so... with that said, I want to give a quick end-of-year promo for WMNF, your last local community radio station. Our WMNF listeners are the best, and you already know that. And we hope you're enjoying the holidays. This is the giving season, so please give a donation to your not-for-profit Last Local Radio. Give online at WMNF.org or call 813-238-8001 during the weekday. Also, please make... You can please make this gift by December 31st. Thank you for keeping us on the air through the year. We really, really appreciate it.
And we have a call.
And we do have a caller. Let's go ahead and jump to this caller. Caller, I don't have anybody who can screen calls today, so please state your name and where you're calling from. Caller, you're on the air. Good morning. Oh, sorry, one moment. I apologize. Caller, you're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you for the program. Wonderful program. Interesting conversation.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
I wanted to say that about this thing, we're not considering that Asians constitute somewhere around 20% or more, according to what I've heard, of the Harvard students. And when affirmative action started, way back when, I was in a class that pretty much initiated or started affirmative action at our school, the School of Engineering of New Jersey, the Jersey Institute of Technology. And they hated us. You know, we came in there and you could see people really, you know, upset that we were there, you know, angry that at the fact that we had been allowed to come in. Before that, it was completely a white school. When they started to allow Latinos, when they started to allow Blacks, and when they started to allow Asians, because they also did not get in, would not get in. You know, we met like hostility, in, like in the lunchrooms and elsewhere, by a lot of people who did not appreciate that that we were all of a sudden part of the campus. But I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for the program.
No, thank you. What was your name, sir? I didn't catch that at the beginning.
Alvaro,
thank you for calling in. I mean, you can stay on the line if you want. I know that a few of us are going to have some questions for you. My question for you is, when was this happening? When were you going through that?
1972.
Okay. So that's right, actually, when the Great Society was being unveiled by Lyndon B. Johnson. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting.
And people were fighting. You know, this was the time of the Young Lords and the Black Panthers and all those people took positions on education, you know, that schools needed to open up because it couldn't be that they were all educating whites only and not allowing other people to get educated.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, sir. Thank you. This is Jamal. Yes, you're correct. I believe the Harvard enrollment right now of Asian American students, or possibly Asians. I'm not sure if it includes Asian Americans and Asians, but it's 23%. And the question I wanted to ask you is: do you feel that, based on if you know about the case, that Harvard is or is not, you know, trying to put a cap on Asian students? And I know this is the kind of the first time we see where someone is saying that they're trying to put a cap on us in terms of a minority group, and what are your thoughts about that?
Well, my feeling is that if you have 23% of the population of your campus of one ethnic group, I think you do want to mix it up. I can tell you that as parents, I have a daughter that's 30 years old now, but when she was in middle school, a group of parents, a group of us parents, used to take our kids all the schools, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, all the schools. We used to take them to on day trips, and Harvard was really kind and very supportive, and they gave us lunch and they put us together with the students of color, the organizations of students of color, to meet with us and they arranged and were very cordial toward us. Yale, not so much. You know, Yale was a little hostile. It was mean. They really did not want us there. But Harvard was very, very kind, very, very supportive.
Thank you very much.
And this was recently then, so only a few years, maybe a decade ago, that you experienced this with your daughter?
Yeah, I'm talking about my daughter was 12. She's 30 now, so about 15 years ago.
About 15 years ago, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, around 12 or 13.
So obviously, you know, you're in favor of affirmative action. That's kind of your stance on this. Okay.
Definitely. It's good for Asians too.
Yeah, without a doubt. And for women as well. And have you, listening to the show, what are your thoughts on the social resiliency score that Nestor has been putting out here as a potential concept for modifying affirmative action to take into account economic disparities and other things like that?
I support affirmative action. I think that
do you think it needs to be modified a little bit for the current environment?
Well, I think everything can always be improved. I'm not sure what the proposals are today regarding affirmative action, but modifications to deal with the present situation, I think would be good, but But I think he has affirmative action has a good experience. I think a good history, and I think he should continue. I know Asian Americans do as a whole very well throughout the whole nation, but is their experience at other schools necessarily the same as in Harvard? I mean, are they also, I don't think they can be, but 20% of other bodies, like in Princeton and other schools?
I honestly don't know the answer to that.
That's a great question, though.
Yeah.
But we need to find out.
I do know there's another lawsuit similar to the Harvard lawsuit, but it's, I believe, a white female against the University of Texas.
That was closed.
It was another case against affirmative action. And Alvaro, a question I make to you, in your professional life, have you seen the value of diversity in your in the businesses and your professional life? You know, what are your thoughts on that? You know, some people will argue against diversity in the workplace. I just want to hear your thoughts on that, since you seem to be passionate.
Diversity is always good. You know, people can focus on their work, can focus on what they have to produce and what they have to render, what they have to do, without having to worry about of that thing. So if you feel you're okay at work, is best, rather than you feel oppressed at work by the social atmosphere. So I think that definitely diversity. If you're going in there and you're okay and your job is get the work done, then it's a lot better than if you feel, I'm being discriminated for this or that reason, you know?
And how do you feel that our local community here in Hillsborough County, Pinellas, et cetera, is doing regarding the diversity quotient?
Horrible. I think that Tampa City Council, I think that Hillsborough County, is terribly put together. It's not representative of the population. I think that racism is thick and heavy, and prevalent everywhere. You know, it's pretty harsh. I mean, in the north it's pretty bad, but here it's, I think, a little more stark.
And I think there could be some evidence that I'm just looking here at an article that says that that Asian Americans made up about 22% of Harvard's enrollment and 26% of MIT. So it could be something across the board among Ivy League schools that Asian Americans do make up a large percentage, based on the fact that Asian Americans are about 5% of the population of public high school students.
Okay. I think that should be recognized. You know, I think that we should knock them for doing a good job. You know, they should not be, you know, we should not feel that as bad. I mean, it's good. You know, if you have that kind of a situation, you're dedicated, you're disciplined, you work hard. You know, it's wonderful. If everything, I mean, and I'm not saying it's not, but if all the testing and all the things are fair, I think that it is good when people excel, you know, when by the hard work.
But
I don't think that that's the only thing that should count, though, in terms of the people that we allow to get educated. You know, I think that the people are you know, they have emotional intelligence. They have all kinds of other things by which you can judge success, and by which you can judge good character and good development, possibility of development in students. And I think a lot of those should be considered. We need to look at history, for instance, and some of our greatest scientists were not very, very good students, you know?
Yep. Agreed.
I know we can think of the guy who created or put together electricity, as I heard. We can think of Steve Jobs, was it?
I mean, there's Steve Jobs, there's Mark Zuckerberg.
Of, you know, that
yeah, yeah.
That had a lot to contribute, but you know, just they just didn't function within the way that our education was structured.
And so,
yeah, I wanted to say also that this is interesting, because it is a minority, but they, in this article, Austin New York Times, they're saying there's an internal report that if Harvard looked at everything being equal alone and didn't consider race, that the Asian American enrollment rate would rise to 43% at Harvard.
I believe that. Why? Take into account all
That would be because they're saying that the article is saying that, and this return review is saying that if we looked at everyone's who applies to Harvard and everyone's admission criteria, regardless of race or legacy or any factors,
based on merit,
mm-hmm. that the Harvard enrollment rate would increase to 43%. Pretty much all the people who would be qualified to get into Harvard, that number would go up based on the amount of Asian Americans that apply to Harvard.
I'd like to add to that something that when I was growing up, and I'm from a white middle class family, that education was a value that my parents taught us. And I want to say that I've had friends and neighbors, and I've worked with Asian people. Education is the top priority. So I just want to make a little reference to the fact that in different cultures, education has different values. Some cultures believe in work, some cultures believe in education, and that could be another show.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I think that education is a very strong.
It is, but that's your
In all of our cultures. I think that
it isn't in all cultures. No, not all cultures agree with that. More cultures.
Give me an example of a culture that doesn't.
Well, there's cultures that when we had trades, they would say, "Well, you grow up and you become a coal miner." It doesn't matter that you have intelligence. This is what our family does.
And I hate to say it, but I think that to a certain extent, the African-American culture, because I'm one who tends to side with Du Bois over the Booker T. Washington Harvard argument, because Du Bois at the time, when they had that huge debate over who was the leader or the mm-hmm. black viewpoint.
Jamal, just for our listeners, tell us who Du Bois is.
Well, W.E.B. Du Bois was a scholar, an educator, one of the founders of the NAACP, and a big advocate to education versus trade, where Booker T. Washington, he started Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, and he was a big proponent. Well, Du Bois was, I want rights now, I want equality. Booker T. Washington was where, go to school and get a vocational, not like math, science, go learn a trade, be a carpenter, do this,
become
do
a professional, blue-collar worker.
Right, exactly, for the most part, yeah.
And so, Alvaro, I just want to thank you again for calling in this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you
have a great day, and stay safe out there, please.
All right, yes, thank you. You too. Take care.
All right. And so Alvaro, very in favor of affirmative action. He saw himself when he started going to school in the 70s. That's when the Great Society was started. And, there was definitely value. And his experience continues to, he says that affirmative action, there's still a place for affirmative action mm-hmm. in society when he saw his daughter coming through. And so I see another caller calling in. We'll get to you in a second. We're going to jump to our last break, and then we're going to jump to our caller. We'll continue this conversation here. So, thank you for listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5.
Roman of the Urban Cafe, and I would like to take this time to thank those of you who have called into our show in the past. Now remember that we welcome your voice, and it's better to call earlier than later to ensure that your voice is heard. The number is 813-239-9663. We would love to hear from you.
WMNF 88.5 FM proudly presents the new public affairs show, The Urban Cafe, starting Sunday 9 a.m.
Social media has been misused in a number of ways. Let's look at Trayvon Martin for a minute. So Trayvon Martin gets shot. What happens? They go into a social media account and they start using it against him, or trying to anyway, right? Then you got the young man who, I don't know what his name is, but he was put out there on the social network and during the Boston bombings as a potential suspect. He ended up committing suicide. You can't take that kind of stuff back. People use the social media network in ways that are very harmful to themselves as well as to other people. For instance, when you go to get a job nowadays, the employer says, you have a Facebook account? I want access to it. And then they go and look at it, and they see that everything that you've done, when you put your life out there on the internet, it's for anyone to see and all the time.
Leave your comments at the Urban Cafe, Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. here on WMNF.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, welcome back.
Welcome back to WMNF 88.5.
Have a good day, everybody.
Yeah, you listen to the Urban Cafe. We got Claire, Nestor, and Jamal, as well as your host, Joshua. I'm controlling the board, so apologize for any gaffes if there's been any.
Jack of all trades over there.
I'm trying, bro. I'm trying.
Talk about diversified.
Affirmative action here in action at WMNF. And so I do want to say we got another a quick promo here. Support for WMNF comes from our members at the Strass Center. Comedian Trey Crowder, who co-authored the Liberal Redneck Manifesto, Dragon Dixie Out of the Dark, is at the Strass on March 1st. More information at strasscenter.org. Thank you, Strass, for being an underwriter. We appreciate that. And so we have a caller on hold right now. We've been talking about affirmative action. And so I'm going to go ahead and bring the caller on the air. Caller, you are on the air. What is your name and where are you calling us from?
My name is Gino. I'm calling from Tampa.
Hey, good morning, Gino.
Good morning.
Hey, Gino.
Hello.
What are your thoughts?
Well, on affirmative action, you talked about Clarence Thomas, and he was opposed to it. My understanding is that Clarence Thomas, he was a recipient of affirmative action to get where he was. I don't think he started out as a person of class, as you said. I don't think that's true. I think he was a recipient of affirmative action.
That is correct. You're right. He was a recipient, but he was one of those people that said, I wish it would have gone differently. Like, after he received the benefits from it, it's like, no, I'm not really in support of affirmative action.
But exactly. Yeah. See, it's his character. It's his character. And then you spoke about the presidents earlier. Bush, they were basically, if you compare Bush to Trump, sure, all those niceties that they said may have been true. But my understanding is that he was considered one of the top 15 worst presidents. Especially, and he, if I'm not mistaken, he is the person that put Clarence Thomas in there.
Herbert Walker Bush. Yeah, he was, I believe, the one who put Clarence Thomas in the Supreme Court. That is correct.
Right. And when we talk about affirmative action, also through with the Asians, my understanding is that sure, they're very, very good with their academics. But from my understanding, they said with Harvard, I heard about that case. That's all they could do. That's what they were saying. I heard someone say that on the radio. That's all they could do was academics. There was nothing else that they had to go with their academics. And they wanted a melting pot within a person, not just one. You could do academics, and that's it. They wanted a melting pot in your character and everything else. And that's, they were saying that they did. That's all they could do is just do that. And then someone else said that your grades is not an indication of you getting into a school because you make straight A's, but there are 50,000 other people that make straight A's. So yeah. You didn't get in. That don't mean anything.
And you bring a, yeah, that's I think kind of some of the points we're trying to bring across. I don't know if you were listening to the show a little bit earlier when Nestor was talking about his concept of social resiliency, about basically modifying affirmative action to account for the underprivileged based on economic disparities and so forth. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Sure, I do. Let me say this. Let's take Harvard. How long has it been around? 250, 300 years?
Something like that, yeah.
Right now, if you take, let's take the, I'm African American. Let's take that. A person that may have built Harvard, like George Washington, the University of Georgia in D.C., who have built them and couldn't get in, couldn't even get an education for all those years, but who built America. But you denied me education for 300 years. And actually, if you look at our education, if I'm not mistaken, truly, we didn't start, they didn't start letting us really truly get education until the 60s or the 50s.
You're talking about when the Civil Rights Movement basically became law.
That's one. Yes, right. Now, we had our own schools, black schools, sure. But even prior to that, they didn't let you get education. Mm-hmm. But my thing is this. How could you deny me of getting an education in a country which you brought me to, which I built, physically built, and died for in every war, in every kind of situation you can name? But now it's you bring out affirmative action to help me catch up to where you are. And if you start today, I heard, if you started today, you take all the African-Americans and you started today by giving them affirmative action and letting them into a lot of different things, it would take lifetime, more than a lifetime, for us to even catch up with the European descent.
Yeah, it's really a generational gap, yeah, to your point.
Right,
I agree.
Right. So, yes.
Fascinating. Thank you so much for your feedback and for listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF at 8.5. This is why we talk about this, because there's people who are very passionate. Carl, you still have some thoughts? You can. All right. Thank you, caller, for calling in. We really, really appreciate that. And so, you know, affirmative action is real. It affects a significant amount of the population. And the reality is, you know, Claire mentioned it earlier, you know, we need to have the only way, I firmly believe that the best way to improve the gaps in economic disparities is through education. And, you know, and so we have to do this through programs like affirmative
action. Start them young. Get them educated young too. Well, our country is one of the only countries that don't teach our children languages. You go to other countries and their kids can speak 3 and 4 languages. I've known mothers who came here from other countries who did not teach their children their homeland language because they wanted them to be American, which is a sad thing, because now their children are grown up. If they had that bilingual thing, they would have had so much opportunity for jobs. So moms, teach your children your language.
And dads. Absolutely. I agree.
And dads. And we have another caller. And let's bring this caller on the air here.
I'm all about women.
I hear that. I hear that. As am I.
All right. And so... Oh, the caller dropped. Go ahead.
And while we're waiting for that caller to come back, I want to shout out Christy Andre, a friend of mine who's on Facebook. Shout out to you.
Bravo.
She is saying some solid things. She just wanted to put it out there. Definition of intelligence, let's be cautious here, disagrees from educational institutions, does not equate to intelligence. Hello? Oh, there we are. Especially the educational system of the U.S., it's just we're in a society built to require degrees to advance. And she does go on by saying our astrophysicists in the 1950s were from Germany, so on and so forth. So it's really recognizing what we're saying is intelligence, what we're defining as educational or institutional success. It has shifted significantly. And again, we live in a capitalist society, so we've fooled people into believing the only way to succeed is education. And I'm not saying that it's not. I wouldn't say the only way. I think there are alternatives to formal education. There are informal things. There are internships. There are experiences. There are things that they can do, apprenticeships, things like that. So I think we in this capitalist society have fooled the public into believing the only way to be successful is going through a formal educational process. And what that does is it limits so many people who don't have access. They've already thought, well, I can't go to college, so I better deal with whatever I'm going to have to deal with. I feel like, you know, it's just one of those things. Affirmative action is an amazing thing, but it doesn't have to be the only thing. Education doesn't have to be, or formal education, traditional education, doesn't have to be the only way.
Right.
And I agree with you, and that's fantastic. We're going to bring a caller on the air. Caller, we're getting to the very end of the show, so please keep your comments to around 30 seconds, please. Caller, you're on the air? Caller.
Hello?
Yes, good morning, caller. Where are you calling us from?
From St. Petersburg.
Hey, thank you, caller. And can you please keep your comments to about 30 seconds? We got to jump off the air here in a minute.
Sure, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Okay, listening to your show, just a different perspective.